Greeting and a welcome to each one gathered this morning. My wife and I have been reading through Numbers and some of the things that they did there and that happened there. And, well, it's interesting, but sometimes my response is, you know, I'm glad I'm not part of that. I mean, it's some of the things that they had to do, and the offerings and the sacrifices and the order of things was what I would call incredibly complicated. But I'm sure there was a blessing in it for them as they followed it, and there's a blessing for us as we follow the Lord, even though sometimes we don't quite understand. For a text verse this morning, if you would turn with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 13. In verse 11. When I was a child, I spake as a child, I understood as a child, I thought as a child, but when I became a man, I put away childish things. Now, those of you that remember the message that I preached the last time about unless you become as little children, this is a sequel to that. So what is the apostle telling us in these verses? And by the way, the title of the message this morning is Putting Away Childish Things, taken right out of this verse 11 here. So what is the apostle telling us in this verse? If we take the passage from verse 9 through 12, he's speaking of the superiority of the vision and the knowledge of the next life in comparison to this one, the way I understand it. I'll just read that, verses 9 through 12. For we know in part, we prophesy in part, but when that which is perfect is come, then that which is in part shall be done away. When I was a child, I spake as a child, I understood as a child, I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. For now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then shall I know even as also I am known. Here he compares the transition of this life to the next, to that of a child growing up. Now, there are many things in life that are not clear to a child that he understands a lot better when he becomes a man. There are several ways that I can think of to look at this passage, and one is the physical and mental development of a child as he grows from childhood to adulthood. Another is the spiritual development of a babe in Christ as he or she grows in the Lord. And the third, of course, is what I was just talking about, the childish tendencies that we need to grow out of as we become adults. We could also focus on the things that will be clearer to us in the next life than in this one. But like I said, what I want to focus on this morning is the childish tendencies that we need to grow out of as we become adults. Several weeks ago, when I preached the other message, we looked at the things where we have to become as little children if we want to enter the kingdom. This time it's the other side of that coin, you might say. Well, the first question we could ask, why is it necessary? Why is it necessary that we put away childish things? Well, because the more of some of these childish tendencies that we retain as we become adults, the more problems we'll have in life. And by now, you may be thinking back to some of the things I said the other time about Jesus, how he related to children. He said, bring them to me. He said, such is the kingdom of heaven. He took them up in his arms and blessed them. And well, those scriptures warm our hearts, and they should. Who can help but love the way Jesus related to the little ones? He took them in his arms and blessed them. And he certainly had something in mind when he used them as examples for us. We notice from nearly every one of these scriptures that we looked at the last time that the children he was speaking of were little. The qualities that he spoke of were the qualities of little children that we need as we become followers of his. Just to recap a little bit, they're innocent. They're not guilty. Their mind and conscience hasn't been defiled. They're free. Little children are completely trusting. They don't have any concept of danger, at least most of them don't. You find one once in a while that does, but most of them don't. And third, they're guileless. They don't pretend. They just are what they are, and they'll say it, exactly what they think. And four, they're forgiving. They squabble with one another, maybe over a toy 1 minute, and be playing happily the next. They don't hold any grudges, and we need that. And they're easily corrected. When they're spanked for being naughty, what do? Well, they snuggle down on their parents' lap and go to sleep. And they're easily taught. They don't see themselves as knowing it. They're ready to listen. And we need those characteristics. But these characteristics of small children that we do so well to emulate, but unfortunately, as children get a little older, they tend to lose these very qualities when the tendencies of our old nature start to take over. The deceitfulness of sin starts to work in their life. They lose their innocence. They start to have things to hide. They're tempted to cover up things that they do wrong. They lose their innocence. When someone restrains them or punishes them, sometimes they get angry and pout. They start to hold grudges. They want what they want, even when it's not good for them. The very qualities that make little children such a blessing, an example of the kingdom of heaven, gradually slip away, and eventually they come to the place where they find themselves bound by the law of sin, unable to help themselves or to take back the innocence of childhood. The apostle says in 1 Corinthians 14:20, he says, "Brethren, be not children in understanding, howbeit in malice be ye children, but in understanding be ye men." In malice be ye children. In other words, forgive, forget, overlook, love each other even when you had a disagreement. I'd like to do that this morning. I'd like to gain some understanding of some childish tendencies that we need to leave behind as we grow up, lest they trouble us as adults, and especially as we grow in our Christian life as a child of God. Let me read a couple of verses in Ecclesiastes 11, verses 9 and 10. Before we get into this, Ecclesiastes 11, verse 9. "Rejoice, O young man, in thy youth, and let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth, and walk in the ways of thine heart and in the sight of thine eyes. But know thou that for all these things God will bring thee into judgment. Therefore remove sorrow from thy heart and put away evil from thy flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity." Sometimes we're so reluctant to let go of the things of our childhood and youth. We enjoy them so much. But we need to realize that childhood and youth are vanity. They're vanity because childhood and youth are not what life is all about. They're a stage that every one of us must of necessity go through, but we don't stay there. Life moves on. As children, we go to school. Some enjoy it very much. Some wish they could keep going to school forever. And some people keep on going to school well after they're adults, or should be. That's what colleges are made out of. But school is only a preparation for life as an adult. It's not an end in itself. Even so, childhood and youth are not an end in themselves, but they're a time of preparation for life as a grown-up. And I'm not trying to say don't enjoy life as a youth or a child. Like the Ecclesiastes writer says, "Rejoice in thy youth, let thine heart cheer thee, but keep your focus on the future. Remember, this time of your life is fleeting, and it will soon be over whether you like it or not. The next stage of your life will be upon you, so prepare for it." I have a lot of good memories of my childhood. I enjoyed life as a youth, even without a youth group or youth activities. Now, probably most of you find that kind of hard to believe, but yeah, I didn't know I was missing anything. I treasure the memories of the days when my future wife and I were courting, but life has moved on. And I don't regret the preparations I made for the things that I learned as I went through each stage of my life. The things I learned and experienced as a youth have been valuable to me many times since. I said, keep your focus on the future. As children, we tend to do that. But don't be so future-focused that you miss the opportunities and the blessings where you are now. Learn what you can. Enjoy the blessings that are yours now. Don't miss them for wishing you were just a little older. Like the 4 and 5-year-olds that are so eager to go to school. Or the lower grade students that are so eager to be with the big students in the big room. Or the upper graders that look ahead being out of school. And those out of school can't wait to be old enough to be young folks. Old enough to start driving. Old enough to begin courtship. And eventually those courting look forward to being married. And that's all normal. But let's not be in a hurry. Because you know what? Once you get married and life takes off, you realize the vanity of all the eagerness to be just a little older. Life keeps on moving along from one stage to the next faster than we ever dreamed possible as a youth. Just ask us grandpas. I finished up trimming my trees yesterday, and I observed my trees, and what I got to thinking is, you know, these trees are showing some of the same things that are true in my life. They're getting old. When I planted those trees, I was probably in my 30s, maybe a little more, and I never dreamed that I would outlast those trees. But there was 10 apple trees, and today there's 6 of them, and as I observed one tree, especially probably by next year or so, there'll only be 5. But that's the way life is. It moves on. As we move beyond childhood and youth, we realize how short life was. If we move from youth to middle age to old age, the reality of the brevity of life on earth is driven home. We begin to realize more fully the vanity of life on earth. We're but here in preparation for a much longer life in eternity. How foolish, how vain to squander the opportunities that we're given in this life to prepare ourselves for the glories of life in heaven in eternity. To summarize the first point this morning, childhood and youth will not last. Use them to your best advantage. Learn all you can. Good things, useful things. Acquire and cultivate good habits. Study diligently. Don't stop studying when you get out of school, by all means. Learn the scriptures. Memorize verses. Study doctrine. Learn why your fathers in the church believe and practice what they do. It is good for a man that he bear the yoke in his youth. Lamentations 3:27. I'm going to rephrase that just a little bit. It is good for a man that he bear the yoke of Christ in his youth. Don't do things in your youth that you will regret later. It's not worth it. All right, I'd like to look at some things, some childish tendencies that we need to leave behind as we grow up. Now, when I say grow up, I mean somewhere between the ages of 16 and 21, it should be pretty well done. I realize some grow up sooner than others, not to say that we don't have some growing up to do after that. We do. But, of course, our course of life is usually pretty well set by the time we're 21. Yeah, it can be changed, but as we get older, it becomes more difficult. First tendency I want to look at is the self-centered, me-first mentality. A baby cares for no one but himself. No one and nothing else matters. Not father, not mother, not brother, not sister. Not feelings, not schedules, not health, not sickness, not even death in the family. A baby cares only about himself. His entire focus of life is himself, his hunger, his wet diaper, his comforts, his needs, his wants. His world revolves around himself. And this is one of the first things that as parents we need to teach our children, and that is, you're not the center of everything. Yeah, we put up with it for a while. They're the center of everything. We cater to the baby's self-centeredness, like I said, for a while, but he must soon learn that he is not the reason for everyone else's existence. He needs to learn the meaning of wait before he learns how to say it. As parents, we well realize that a baby that continues to have his every whim catered to will soon be a very unhandy individual to have in the house. Some call them brats. Another name for self-centeredness is selfishness. Some marks of a selfish child or a person. Have you ever noticed when little children, they pile up things? You don't have to be very old for that. Maybe they can't even walk. But they pile up things for themselves so no one else can play with them. Or, I want it. Why? Because somebody else has it. I want it because someone else wants it. I want it all. I don't want to share. It's mine. Don't ask me for it. It's not my idea, so I won't play. What I have is best, biggest, and fastest. Thinking now of boys that are a little older when they're talking about tractors and trucks and whatnot all else. Mine is the best. The self-centered, selfish person is hard to get along with. And the more of this childish trait we retain as we enter adult life, the more difficult life will be for us. So let's put it away. Because this tendency, if it's not consciously curbed and denied, only tends to get worse as a person gets older. We've probably all think of people like that. Life is all about them. All right, the second one. To want to be instantly gratified. I want what I want, and I want it now. I don't want to wait. Impatience, impulsiveness, recklessness, they're all results of this thinking. It used to amuse me when our children were babies. They would wake up and they'd want to be fed. Not in a little bit, now. Well, Mama would insist that they had a dry diaper first and would proceed to change it, and the baby didn't appreciate it at all. They wanted to have their hunger satisfied now. Well, the person that wants to be instantly gratified doesn't think ahead. The babies that want to be fed right now, they're not thinking of having to be woke up once they go to sleep when they're done eating and be disturbed for a diaper change after they've fallen asleep. Well, we can smile about that, and that's not a serious matter. But let that child get to be 5 or 6 years old and still acts the same way, it's another matter. By then, he's become unhandy to live with. Let's say the boy comes in from the barn or from the outside and he's got mud or manure on his boots, and he walks clear across the kitchen floor in his barn boots on his way to the refrigerator. He wants something out of the refrigerator, but I dare say Mama's not going to be very happy with him. And the bigger and the older a child gets, the worse it gets if this tendency isn't curbed. Thoughtlessness, impulsiveness, irresponsibility are not laughing matters anymore. Many a heart and home has been broken by a husband who wanted instant gratification at the bar before he went home. Wife and the children had to suffer. And I'm sure I'm speaking to boys that would never do something like that. But what do you do when you come into the house? Let's say you come into the house after work and mom and sisters are still into a pile of peaches to can. You complain about the mess and supper being late and go plop on the couch for the magazine that come today? Or you pitch in and help? Do you want to be instantly gratified, or are you willing to work and help others for the greater satisfaction of a job well done? What about when you're shopping and you see an item you'd like to have, but you know that you really shouldn't? Can you tell yourself no and pass it by? Can you think ahead of the likely consequences of your actions, how this will affect others? Your parents, your friends, your younger siblings. When you want to go somewhere that you know your parents wouldn't want you to go, can you be grateful for their restraint and not go? Or is instant gratification more important to you? You know, the person given to instant gratification will often spend his time and money on trifles and end up with nothing. And he has no idea where his money or time went. Remember years ago, there was a young man, he used to go to church here. He got himself a Chevy truck, a brand new one. Well, he say, what was the matter with that? Well, he spent a lot of money on that truck that he could have used really well sometime later, and he didn't need it. He didn't need that truck. But it gets worse. As people get older, when parents still are given to instant gratification, they want what they want now. They're setting an example for their children that they will very likely follow. And the problem balloons. We see that all over our society. Parents, we cannot teach our children to be careful and thrifty and to look ahead if we're living for the moment of ourselves. Let's leave this childish tendency where it belongs, back with the children. The third one I want to look at is the fenced animal mentality. Or another title could be It's Allowed. This kind looks at the issues and decisions of life through the eyes of an animal behind a fence. They do anything they're allowed to do, have anything they're allowed to have, and what they refrain from is because of the boundaries that others have set for them. Any decisions they make are made in the context of, may I, or am I allowed, or do I have to? They depend completely on the discernment and wisdom of others to keep them out of trouble. They have no inherent conviction or stability of their own, and this mentality, while often willing to stay within a certain boundary, their focus is the boundary, not why it is where it is. They recently had somebody tell me about an Amishman he was talking to, and they wondered, well, why would you use tobacco? Why would you drink? You know it's not good for you, and it can kill you. Well, they said, it's one of the few things that we're allowed to do. Well, to me, it's how dumb can you get? You're willing to harm yourself just because you're allowed to. Or, have you ever noticed that when you're on the road, let's say you're traveling on the interstate highway, and it starts to snow, starts to get slick on the road. People will not slow down until there's several cars in the ditch. Come on, you have that privilege. You don't have to go 70 just because the speed limit says 70. This mentality, while often willing to stay within a certain boundary, their focus is the boundary, not why it is where it is. They consider it their right and privilege to test its limits, to push it, crowd it, stretch it, like the cow that reaches through the fence for the grass on the other side. When you have this mentality, people often look at their limits or their boundaries as inhibitors to their own enjoyment and happiness. You say, if it wasn't for this rule, if it wasn't for this law, if it wasn't for this standard, then I could be perfectly happy. And they tend to look at anything outside their limits as the thing that would make them really happy, like the cow that seems to think that it's the corn in the second row outside the fence that tastes the best. If you remove their constraints, they have no idea where to stop or how to control themselves. It's like the cows, when the power goes off in the fence, they're out grazing in the cornfield of instant gratification. Well, this is a normal way for young children to think and act. They have no experience. They don't know where the dangers are. They don't know what's acceptable behavior. They're completely dependent on their parents to show them and tell them what they should do. And that's how it should be. But you let that child become a teenager and older, and he still has no idea how to control himself and set some of his own limits, you have a problem on your hands. The growing up experience should include learning to take responsibility for our own actions. The ability to look ahead and discern the consequences of our actions before we do them, and the ability to decide not to do something because of the possible consequences that will follow. Not just run full bore until you hit. That's being childish. A person that learns to do that, you could remove his boundaries and he probably wouldn't change much because he sets boundaries for himself. First, because he knows the benefit of set limits, And second, he wants to be safe, a safe example for others to follow. Young people, learn the whys and the hows and the reasons and the wherefores of the limits and standards that others have set for you. That's true of the parents and of the church and of the government. Don't just say, I don't understand this. I don't see why this is that is necessary. Think of it like this. Do you think that a one-year-old can understand why he has to ride in a car seat? Well, no. Do you think that a two-year-old knows why he can't play with matches or a paring knife? Well, again, no. Or a three-year-old why he can't have all the cookies he wants? Of course not. Well, then don't assume that a limit or a rule is not necessary or doesn't make sense because you don't understand why. If you're like I am, you have a few things to learn yet. Well, think of it like this. What would happen if you went out to the car or the pickup or the van or whatever that you came in this morning, you opened the hood, and you started pulling out everything out from under that hood that you don't know exactly what it does or why it's there? You think you'd run that car home? Well, maybe you would, but I wouldn't. Chances are you wouldn't either. It's been said that don't take a fence down till you know why it was put there. Sometimes fences do need to be taken down. Sometimes new ones do need to be put up. Ask any farmer. But to destroy a fence or a guideline that is still serving its purpose is foolishness. And that's true whether you're a farmer or a father or a young man or a minister. Sometimes young people, and older ones as well, find it rather easy to look at one of our practices and say, this should have been done this way or that way instead of how it is. Or it would make more sense to do it another way. Well, perhaps it's true, but not necessarily. We find it rather easy to find flaws in what somebody else has done. We need to keep in mind that the ability to find flaws and criticize what other people have done or are doing does not prove anyone's intelligence, let alone wisdom. The fact that I can tear down what someone else has built doesn't prove that I can make that I'm smarter than he or that what he did was not done right in the first place or that I'm a builder at all. If you know anything about current events or recent current events, there are different countries where organizations like ISIS and Al-Qaeda and some of those come in, communists, different ones. They come in and they wreck the country. Do they put anything better in its place? No. To be a wrecker does not take much intelligence. That's true in the church too. The fact that someone can criticize the way things are done, the fact that he can stir up discord among the brethren, the fact that he thinks he can argue someone into a corner does not prove the rightness or the soundness of his contention at all. The fact that one can wreck a house does not in any way prove one's ability as a builder. Marky loves to wreck houses. He also has some abilities as a builder, but the fact that he can wreck houses with abandon doesn't mean that he can build it. Those two skills are entirely in opposite fields. The fact that one can create mayhem doesn't prove his ability or qualifications to rule. That's what I was just talking about, some of these organizations that go in and take over countries and just wreck what's there. This afternoon, when you go home, read the third chapter of Nehemiah when you get there. There you read of builders. There were people that were picking up stones and putting them in the wall. The ones that could throw down stones aren't mentioned. So if you would be wise and prove your wisdom and abilities, be a builder, not a wrecker. Be a fence builder, not a crowder. One of the things that we should learn as we grow up is to look at the issues, the decisions in our personal life, family life, church life, through the eyes of one who is personally accountable to God for the decision that is made. As a young person, you're not a father, you're not a mother, you're not a minister or a minister's wife. Not yet. Someday some of you will be. But you would certainly benefit yourself and those around you if you considered some matters as if you were. So instead of chafing under the decisions that they make, think, if I were responsible to God for the decisions that they have to make, if I had to give account to God for the souls that they're accountable for, what conclusion would I come to? If you do that, I venture to say that you'll come out pretty close to where your parents and your ministers come out at. When we were children, we looked at what we wanted to do as the ultimate happiness. When we were allowed to go play with the neighbor boys or go hiking or fishing or swimming, we were happy. And sometimes we would say, wouldn't it be nice if we could do this all the time? Well, as we became adults, we learned, or we should learn, that it doesn't work that way. Doing as we please, getting our own way, having what we want, does not bring us happiness any more than one child has learned when his parents give him leave to do what he wanted to all day. He said, it was not as fun as I thought it would be. So instead of looking at our fences or as inhibitors of our happiness, we need to grow up in our thinking and see them as protectors of our happiness and security, which they really are. All right, another one is in 2 Corinthians 10, verse 12. 2 Corinthians 10, 12. For we dare not make ourselves of the number or compare ourselves with some that commend themselves, but they measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves are not wise. You know, this comparing ourselves with others, that's a tendency that we have as children. We compare our height and our weight and our strength and how fast we can run with children our own age. Man, there's nothing wrong with that for children. But it's a trait that should be left behind with childhood. Because if we carry it along as adults, it will severely limit our usefulness. The person with this mentality limits his usefulness to the performance of those around him. He thinks in terms like, this is all I have to do because that's all that they do. You ever put several children to work, and one of them, well, why aren't you working? Well, I've done as much as he's done. I don't have to do more than they do. Or I failed to do what I should have done because someone else didn't do what he should. Or what I do is better than so and so. Or what I do is no worse than what he or she does. Well, this kind of thinking is a system of negatives to justify himself for what he does or does not do. He doesn't look at the positive choices that he has within his reach. He focuses solely on the activities and the performance of those around him to gauge his own. We shouldn't do that. This type of person will blame his abusive father, his overbearing mother, his strict school teacher for his lack of personal initiative. He'll say, I can't do this or that because of what somebody else did to me. Or I failed to learn and read well or do arithmetic because my teacher didn't take enough time to explain it to me and help me. Or I can't keep a job because people just tell me, there it is, do it, and they don't help me. They don't show me how. Or I didn't finish sweeping the living room because Junior didn't pick up his Legos. I didn't finish feeding the calves because brother didn't fill the feed box. I think we get the idea. This person is forever making excuses for his own lack of performance because of what someone else did or didn't do. And I don't have to tell you that he or she is unhandy to have around. Why? Because you can't depend on them. They're unhandy at home. They're unhandy at work. I've had different subcontractors work for me over the years, and some of them stand out. Some of them for what they were able to do, and some of them for what they didn't. There was a group of electricians one time that I had hired for a certain job. They would work a while, and then they would say, well, we don't have this, we can't finish it up, so we just quit and go home in the middle of the day. Or there was another one, a group of plumbers. Somebody else needs to do this and this and this, so we quit and go home. Unhandy as anything. But then there was one. He was a trim carpenter. Some of you might remember him. They called him Big Andy. Big Andy would go into a house and he would do trim work, and if he didn't have what he needed, he'd make it out of something that was there if he could. It was just the difference between day and night, between him and some other people. So young people, may I kindly challenge you this morning, leave this childish mentality behind, the sooner the better. You know, 10 or 12 years old is not too young to be a responsible person. Take the responsibility for your own actions. Do what you know needs to be done without being told. Do your work heartily as unto the Lord. You're not too young to establish good habits at work, at play, at home, at school, at church. When you make a mistake, admit it. Just say, I made a mistake. I want to do better. Maybe you're watering the calves. Brother comes home with his deer right then, and you're looking at the deer, and you forget and let the water run over, let the trough run over. Well, sure, brother came home with his deer, but you let the water run over, you forgot. Take responsibility for it. Clean it up. And then sometimes people are afraid to do something because they're afraid they will make a mistake or afraid they can't do it as well as someone else. And this too is a result of the comparing mentality. It's good to try to do our work as well as we can. It's good to try to avoid mistakes. But it's not good to refuse to do what we know we should because of that. You know, everyone will make mistakes sometimes. Anyone doing something worthwhile will make them. Those that think they're above mistakes will make them, and those that refuse to do anything for fear of making mistakes are a mistake. I've had a lot of different men and boys working for me over the years, and sometimes they make mistakes. I allow that. I don't make them pay for mistakes that cost me money. Why? Because I know if they work, sooner or later they'll make some mistakes. But I do expect them to learn from it. I don't expect them to go on making the same mistake over and over again. The person that goes on repeating the same mistake has a real problem. So, don't be too critical of other people's mistakes. Give other people as much room for mistakes as you like for your own. Allow for inexperience. Remember, you had to learn how to do the same thing too. And, on the other hand, if you're the perfectionist type, give yourself some room for errors. Why? Because you're human. You'll need it. If you don't allow yourself any room to make mistakes, you become frustrated and hard to live with. Don't become frustrated when you can't do something quite as well as someone else. Do the best you can with what God has given you. Now there's one thing that we could and we need to, and it's good when we look at other people, what other people do. And that is if they do something better than I do. No, don't get envious, don't get jealous. But just say, you know, that's a lesson for me. I can do better too. And just do it. Just get better. Just get better yourself. Well, I promised Andrew I wouldn't make this too long today, so I guess I'll finish it next time. There's some more childish tendencies that I want to cover, but I'll do that in another message. Let's pray.